Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all. We all survived our monastic retreat. So I'd like to thank. Well, I'm sorry that you were all booted out on Sunday. Opportunity to just sit and let the community focus exclusively on the reason why they came here, which even monks can mistake sometimes or become uncurrent. I'm not sure if that's a word. We need to look at it. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I pray that I and all sentient beings, through this life and all future lives, may ever be able to hear the true teachings. Once I have heard the true Dharma, I will not harbor doubts about it or fail to trust in it. Right at the time when I encounter the true Dharma, I will let go of the whole world and embrace the Buddha's teachings. Then, together with all beings on this great earth, may we fulfill the way. The Mahayana Buddhist term, which in Sanskrit is pronounced tathata, and in Japanese is pronounced shinyo, means two things simultaneously. First, it's the word that is used in Mahayana Buddhism to describe, for lack of a better term, absolute reality or truth, the true form of all things, that which transcends forms, the multitude of forms in the world of conditions, in the world of birth and death. Its other meaning is, in Sanskrit, shunyata, or what the Japanese would call ku, which is translated into English as emptiness, which is the underlying basis or fabric, the essence of all things. So when you think of tathāta, you want to think of the true form of things, absolute truth or reality, and that which is empty. Now, I've already talked to you before about the teaching of emptiness, or ku, shunyata. In Chinese, shunyata is written with the same character that you use for sky. And in Japanese, it is pronounced ku, if you read it with one reading, or sora, with the other reading, which means sky. And it expresses that which has no limitations, that which you cannot define or set boundaries to. Understanding shunyata comes from cultivating the heart of compassion, that which embraces all things, that which enfolds all things, that which is still in the midst of all things, that which neither holds on nor pushes away. And of course, this is the basis of the serene reflection meditation practice. You can substitute things here when I talk about embracing all things or still in the midst of all things as conditions. It doesn't matter. If conditions works, then that's fine. Things works, that's fine too. To describe the relationship between compassion and emptiness, the ancestor Nagarjuna used a phrase, shunyata karuna garbham, which literally means emptiness, shunyata, karuna, compassion, garbham, embryo. Emptiness, compassion, embryo. Or emptiness is the source of compassion. Compassion is essentially emptiness. This is how it has been translated. The word emptiness is used in English because shunyata is empty of anything that our minds can grasp hold of. Because the activity of the mind is to structure, to define, to try to encompass in some way. And emptiness is something that you cannot encompass because it is beyond encompassing, beyond definitions. It's dangerous, however, to think of emptiness as something that is real, because emptiness itself is empty. And again, Nagarjuna said that those who believe in the reality of the conditioned world are deluded, but those who believe in the reality of emptiness are really deluded. Because you're saying that this, you know, this ain't real. It's saying that it isn't real and saying that it is empty are very different. It may just seem to be a play on words, but in terms of Buddhism, it's different. And it is the difference between Buddhism and Hinduism. Because Hinduism teaches that all is maya, all is illusion. Buddhism teaches that all is emptiness. So, when we talk about tathāta, which is both reality and emptiness, we have to understand it as the true nature of things, which is empty and which our minds cannot grasp onto or lay hold of in any way. When you read Buddhist works, the term tathāta is often translated as suchness or thusness. And in spite of the difficulty of translating such words into English, Reverend Master always became extremely irritated when she read these words, because she felt that they were nonsensical and they tended to obscure rather than clarify. So she went more for the phrase the immaculacy of emptiness or the immaculacy of nothingness. And she said that the immaculacy of nothingness was the fullest nothingness that she could ever express. And on the logical level, it seems to be a contradiction in terms, but in the heart, it is something that when we let go of everything, we are filled with everything. And this is done by letting go of these definitions, of limitations, of boundaries. She felt that phrases like immaculacy of nothingness, the immaculacy of emptiness was closer to the experience which these words were pointing at. Now, it just so happens that in the Shobokenzo, there is a chapter on Tathata, Shinyo, which Dogen uses a different word for, just to make everything nice and confusing for you. And the word that he used is immo, nice short word. Immo is the Japanese pronunciation of a colloquial Chinese word, which means it, that, or what. And when you use it in the context of Buddhism, it meant that or that which or it that is inexpressible, ineffable. That which we cannot express. That which we cannot express fully through words or language is that which has to be known within one's heart. And this was how Dogen was going to explain Tathata or Shinyo to those who came to hear him lecture. His term immo means the matter which is inexpressible. The chapter on immo begins with a quote from Master Ungodoyo of our tradition, who said that if somebody wanted to realize immo, he or she must become immo. And because we are already immo, why worry about it? Okay. For those of you who are familiar with Dogen's rules for meditation, this phrasing has a familiar ring. Because in the rules for meditation, he says, why are training and enlightenment differentiated, since the truth is universal? Why study the means of attaining it, since the supreme teaching is free? When the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. The kind of expression that he uses makes no logical sense until you understand that he is pointing us in a certain direction. He is pointing us in the direction of the middle way, that which is beyond the opposites of right and wrong, good and bad, full and empty, this and that. And the basis of the opposites is immo itself. The basis of the middle way is immo itself. That which is beyond the opposites, within which the opposites arise, as a matter of fact, is immo, tathata, the true nature of things which is empty of anything our minds can grab hold of. Now, why should we grab hold of them or try if that is the case? Those of us who study religion each have our own experience of what we call being disturbed by the truth. For many of us, it is the experience of raw, bleeding suffering. And for others, it is the experience of discontentedness, the perception that life, there's something missing within it, that is, it is unsatisfactory in some way, that it causes anxiety or fear, or the sense it's just not supposed to be like this somehow. All of these perceptions, the Buddha lumped under the experience of what he calls dukkha, or suffering. And although when we hear the term suffering, we tend to think of the raw bleeding suffering variety. In fact, his use of the word suffering also meant that which is unsatisfactory, that which causes disease, that which causes disturbance, that which bugs us, which we forget about from time to time and seems to rear its head at sometimes of the most inconvenient moments. In the understanding of Tathāta, Tathāta is also regarded as being synonymous with what the Japanese call Hoshin or Bodhicitta, which is the vow to realize enlightenment, the desire for training, the yearning for the eternal. That too is part of Tathāta or Shinyo. So you can begin to see that in order to express this to you in a linear sort of way, and to, yes, and I confess that I've done this, define Tathāta as absolute reality, the true form of things, and that which is empty and which our minds cannot hold on to, that the deeper meaning of Tathāta begins to overflow its definition, and it seeps into everything that is the Buddha Dharma and touches everything, all aspects of our experience. And Dogen explains this in this chapter. Now, interestingly enough, when we first do Jukai, we learn that when we receive the precepts, to become a Buddha is to behave like a Buddha. How does a Buddha behave? A Buddha does not kill, does not steal, does not lie, does not remain angry, does not misuse sexuality, does not speak against others. All of these things. And within this so-called moral code, we begin to understand the arising of compassion. Because to do these things is to create or cause violence against ourselves and against other people. And when we refrain from that kind of expression, first of body, then of speech, then of mind, we are going to be cultivating the mind of compassion itself, the mind of harmlessness, the mind of kindness. It begins with just sitting and not killing, not stealing, etc., etc., and it extends itself farther and farther and farther and farther until we understand it as that which embraces all things and that which is empty. So compassion really has its practical application, which begins with the precepts. And compassion, when we understand it in that sense, is actually very simple. It means don't do that which is going to hurt yourself or other people, which is simple. Now, Dogen's teaching of Immo is identical to this in spirit. Cultivating compassion in the way that we have talked about and in the practice of meditation leads to a deeper understanding of immo, which is not in the mind. It's not something we can intellectualize or grasp hold of. There is a saying, if we fall down on the ground, we can get up again. If we try to rise above the ground, we cannot do so. And because immo is the true nature of all things, and all things are shunyata, or the immaculacy of emptiness, it is by and through all things that we thoroughly learn how to cultivate compassion and how to begin to understand in our guts the meaning of emptiness. It is by and through all things that we learn compassion. And compassion transcends all things. And it is immo itself. If we worry or if we're afraid by what seems like a separation from our true nature, from the life of the Buddha, it is by the very means of the arising of that fear or that worry that we can take a step towards realizing the life of the Buddha. You've heard me talk over and over again about how every state of mind, every moment, is an opportunity for training. It is an opportunity for cultivating compassion. And when we are sitting still, when we are bugged by what is going on around us or what is going on within us, we can sit still within those conditions. We can sit with whatever it is that is arising and cultivate compassion. And as we do this more and more and more and more, we come to understand that the very things with which we sit, the very place in which we sit, is itself immo. It is reality. It is empty. It is compassion. Already, just as it is, there's a famous dialogue between Master Sogyen Andai and Master Kayashata, which describes the way in which we can learn how to meditate with anything. One day, Sogyen Andai hears a wind bell ringing and asks Kayashata, which is ringing, the wind or the bell? And Kayashata looks at his master and says, it is my mind which is ringing. And Sogyen Andai says, what do you mean by that? And he says, my mind is completely still. It is nirvana itself. Sogyen Andai looks at him and says, good answer. How does that apply with what it is that we need to do when we sit? We tend to look outside of ourselves and look at the conditions that are going on around us and attempt to make some kind of adjustment or alter the relationship between ourselves and what is going on. Or, if it's more of an internal problem, we try to do the same thing with ourselves and our thoughts or our feelings or our perceptions. But if we really understand what the teaching of compassion is and what compassion is leading us into, which is Inmo itself, there is no separation between what seemingly disturbs us, the disturbance itself, and Inmo itself. We can remain still in the midst of conditions. Sometimes people tend to think of those who do a lot of meditation or deep meditation as superhuman beings. And the most wonderfully enlightened people that I have ever met have been real human beings. They liked animals. One liked dogs in particular, and had a whole number of them running around his room. Another, Reverend Master herself, liked all sorts of animals. She drank English breakfast tea, but she wouldn't drink Chinese tea. In other words, she was a human being. And our humanity is not something that goes away. If we fall upon the ground, we can get up again, but we can't separate ourselves from the ground. We can't separate ourselves from our humanity, from our bodies, from our minds. Why should we try? Well, maybe because sometimes they hurt so much. But to separate ourselves from them is to simply widen the gap. Rather than learning to sit still with compassion, because body, mind, subject, object, all of these things are immo, just as much immo as immo itself. We are not removed from that which is true, from the emptiness of all things. We are that emptiness. There is nothing to grasp hold of, and there is nothing to push away, because we already dwell within it. This kind of dialogue that takes place between Sogyen Andai and Kayashata teaches that there is no separation between subject and object, between me and my mind, or me and my body, between you and me, between self and other. All of these are Immo itself. Within Immo, karmic consequence ripens, and we can learn how to learn from it, and thus use it as the opportunity for purifying body and mind, instead of perpetuating the illusion of pain and suffering. This too is immo. Now, Dogen uses a beautiful analogy, which I hope I will be able to explain, because it strikes me as something very simple. We will see. He says that we live within the world of illusion, the endless cycle of birth and death, despite our potential for great wisdom. Okay. In other words, we live with the potentiality for Buddhahood, but we can pass through life after life without realizing Buddhahood. He says that this is like the relationship between a rough stone and a finished piece of jade. You can take a rough stone and turn it into a finished piece of jade, but neither the original stone nor the finished jade can anticipate their respective states. It is neither from the stone's perspective nor from the finished jade's wisdom that they came into being. In the same way, human beings and great wisdom are unaware of each other. And yet, we can enter the Buddhist way and become enlightened. Why is this so? Because human beings and great wisdom are already immo. And although most of us look at this from the point of view of the rough stone, we can simply enter the world of immo by knowing and taking refuge in that which is immo, which is the Buddha mind itself. We already dwell herein. And the means for realizing that, awakening to it, is compassion. This is what helps it to ripen. Our true nature is already immo, which, if you remember, way back there we called tathāta, shinyo. We cannot gain it. It's not something you gain, and it is not something that you don't gain. How do we awaken it? Dogen says, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. So we learn to sit still in the midst of conditions, to sit still and to know that when we sit still, when we find that stillness in the midst of conditions, the conditions are immo itself. There is another dialogue that took place between a master and a disciple. The disciple asked the master, how do I become a Buddha? And the master said, have you finished your lunch yet? And he said, yes. He said, then wash out your bowl. And this too is immo. It's the next thing, to do that which is the next step and to take refuge in that. If we fall upon the ground, we can get up again. If we make mistakes, it is by means of those mistakes that we cleanse karma. If we are able to cultivate compassion, it is not the eradication of all the mistakes. It is the perfection of compassion, which is very different. When we remain still in the depths of our own hearts, we see that compassion is the immaculacy of emptiness, that this immaculacy is immo, that it is by means of immo that we fall down, and it is by means of immo that we get up again. If we try to rise above the ground, we can't do it. We can never get away from our own humanity. It's impossible, because to try to do something, to try to get away from our humanity, from conditions, from our state of mind, from our experience, is to try to get away from Immo itself. And you can't do that, because it's already here. Such a thing cannot be done. Don't be disturbed by conditions. Sit still within them. Our own sitting place, our own body and mind, is Immo itself. And this Immo is compassion. Okay? Now go out and do it. Easy to say, difficult to practice, not impossible. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.